All right, welcome to another interview here on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. I built the platform so we can have free speech conversations about things that really matter in the world and things you may not hear on other platforms, especially mainstream platforms. And tonight we are joined by a first-time guest, an extraordinary individual. Her name is Kay Rubacek, and her website is krubacek.com. I'll spell it for you in a little bit here. But she is an award-winning filmmaker, a producer, an author who specializes in exposing socialism, communism, fascism, and the harms, the suffering of humanity that's brought about by those tyrannical systems. And she's got a free downloadable book on her website. Again, I'll spell it out for you here in a little bit. It's called Nowhere Left to Run, 10 Steps to Survive Tyranny. She joins us now. Thank you so much, Kay Rubacek, for your work and for spending time with us tonight.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's an honor to have you on. I saw some of your work with some other interviews you had done and, you know, reached out to invite you on. I think your message is so critical for our time. So first question, though, since this is the first time we've spoken, how on earth did you get into this focus, this specialty? Of all the things you could have done, why this?
Good question, because as a video producer, you know, I could have tried to work my way to Hollywood, be making big budget movies and things like that. And even at one point in time, one of my kids said to me, "Mom, why don't you have a real job in Hollywood?" And I've had to teach my kids discernment, right? You know, and that I really think that I want the work that I do to have meaning. And sometimes that means you have to sacrifice other things. And my family has escaped communism three times, regimes, really? Three times from three countries, first in Russia in the 1920s, and then in China, where my father was born and raised as a young Russian boy. But then the Chinese Communist Party took over. They had to escape. They were very lucky to survive. They would have ended up in labor camps, slave labor prison camps, if they were able to actually live. And my husband's family they escaped the former Czechoslovakia under communism in the Eastern European bloc before the Berlin Wall fell. So that has been a motivator for me, but I also myself spent a day in a Chinese prison where I was a human rights advocate, and I was naive to communism. I was naive to the evils of communism. I didn't realize how much, you know, I didn't realize it was still alive and well until I came face to face with police that put me in prison. I didn't break any law in China. I was arrested for holding the word compassion on Tiananmen Square.
So wait a minute. Walk us through that. Were you in Beijing? Were you in the main, like, Tiananmen Square or something? How did this happen?
Yes, I was. I was on Tiananmen Square, which is in the heart of China's capital in Beijing. And it's known as a very public place where people go. It's also known to the Chinese people as sort of the last place of appeal if you cannot get your message out. Historically, people have gone to Tiananmen Square to try and make a public appeal. And so many Chinese people were being arrested, being imprisoned, being tortured and even killed for trying to make a protest on Tiananmen Square. I was arrested in 2001, and that's when the biggest human rights atrocity happening in China was the persecution of the Falun Gong spiritual group. And when I went, I knew I was going to hold a banner. I went with a friend, and my dad, who was born and raised in China, said to me, "You know, you're naive, you're ignorant." He was right. He was absolutely right. I was, but I'm also very stubborn and I need to see things. I feel like, you know, I always ask questions. I'm curious and I needed to understand how the regime could kill and torture people for meditating, for believing in something like truth, compassion, and tolerance. And so I went to China, Tiananmen Square. I held a banner. It was a very large banner, so there was a lot of, you know, a few people holding truth, compassion, tolerance. But I was the last one left holding that banner. And I looked over the banner as I was surrounded by not uniformed police. Tiananmen Square, this is China, this is communist China. They have more plainclothed police officers there in Tiananmen Square than they do military. And you see a lot of military there, but there's a lot more plainclothes police officers, because within 30 seconds I was, you know, surrounded.
Wow.
And I looked over the banner and I was holding the word compassion in Chinese. They told me that was illegal. I know I broke no law, but they told me
just to have the word for compassion.
Yes. Yes.
And what's the Chinese word for compassion?
Shan. S-H-A-N. Shan. Yes.
Oh, similar to mountain.
Yes, there you go. Yes, different tone, but exactly right. Yes.
Okay, great. Wow, this is extraordinary. So just a programming note, we normally don't use the video of our guests during this segment, but you're broadcasting video and it's coming in very clearly. Is it okay if we go ahead and use your video for this interview?
Yeah, sure. Not a problem. Yeah.
Okay. Because I think your facial expressions also really lend more meaning to what you're saying.
Okay.
Okay. No, cool. I mean, yeah, it's you're communicating very effectively in this way, but I did want to ask for permission.
Thank you.
So do you speak Chinese, by the way?
No, I understand a little bit. I've interviewed more than 100 survivors of communism as a filmmaker and author, and many of them were from China. And so I've picked up more on the mannerisms than on the language.
I see.
And I've had to set up translation systems for my interviews where I'm looking at someone with a simultaneous translation coming in to my ear from a translator in another room, so that when I'm looking at that person, I need them to know that I'm understanding them as they speak, because that way they will trust me. And because to get these people to speak on camera is really hard.
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly. Right. And I didn't just interview survivors of torture and brutality, which I did, but I also interviewed perpetrators, people who have carried out torture and brutality and things like that in China. And so I really needed to gain their trust. And so no, I don't speak Chinese, but, you know, I've picked up a few words along this journey of exposing human rights abuse in China and really socialism coming here to America.
Well, I want to give out your website here for people just to spell it. It's K Rubacek. So KayRubacek.com. And I'll ask our editor to put that on screen as well. And what I share with you, Kay, is my wife is from Taiwan and her family escaped Chinese communism. Wow. With Chiang Kai-shek. And I used to live in Taiwan. And so I do speak conversational Mandarin, and I lived in the culture. I'm very familiar with, I think, a lot of what you are talking about, you know, the interacting with people and hearing the stories. For example, I've sat down with people who lived under communism, also elder individuals who lived under Japanese occupation in Taiwan and who faced famine, and they had to grow guerrilla gardens of sweet potatoes just to not starve to death in hidden places in the mountains and things like that. So the reason I say that is because I know that what you're sharing is genuine. And don't you have, is it a film or a book called Hard to Believe?
I have a documentary film called Hard to Believe, yes.
And you chose that title because what, people just couldn't believe what you were saying?
Yes, because that movie is on a particular crime in China, carried out by the Chinese Communist Party that I feel is, well, it is hard to believe. And that's really why the title was so perfect, because that film is really on the crime of forced organ harvesting in China. And we put this out before that term, forced organ harvesting, was as well known as it is now. But it's the killing of prisoners of conscience for the sale of their organs on a massive scale. And I'm not talking black market. I'm talking, as you're probably aware, is this is being run by brokers, hospitals, doctors, Chinese Communist Party members. The state is very much aware of it. And because the crime is so horrific, when I first heard about it, it was really hard to fathom until I read the evidence. And now there's volumes of evidence. There's no lack of it. There's even been an international people's tribunal headed by the Sir Geoffrey Nice QC, who was the former prosecutor at The Hague for the war crimes tribunal against the former Yugoslavia Slobodan Milosevic. So this prosecutor headed this International People's Tribunal to investigate the crime of forced organ harvesting in China. And I was there in London where they gave the final judgment in 2019. I filmed it, put that into a short documentary as well. And they said, we're dealing with a criminal state with China, with the CCP. They have been doing this for decades, and they are killing prisoners of conscience, innocent people, for the sale of their organs and making billions every year. And that crime is hard to believe. It's hard to accept that people can be so cruel to fellow human beings. But this is what socialism does to a society. It allows people to put that sort of cognitive dissonance in their minds and be like, well, we can murder those people, but not these people. And then later on, well, we'll murder these people too. You start to dehumanize. You start to look at things. They take faith and they take God out of the picture entirely and under an atheist system like that. So anyway, that's where the crime is. Hard to believe. And yes, we investigated why so few people are paying attention to such a horrific crime, and very sort of educational film that went through the education market here in the US too. So it reached a lot of people.
And you're right. There's been a lot more awareness about this over the last, let's say, 20 years or so. But before that, if you had mentioned this to anybody, they would say, oh, that can't possibly be happening. There's no way that's happening. Yeah. And I heard that from people for quite a long time. But then, you know, there's Falun Gong. So the truth keeps coming out about how they are targeted for organ harvesting because they lead healthy lifestyles. So their organs are not polluted or contaminated, and their organs are healthy. And therefore, I mean, they practice a form of Tai Chi and they have a very healthy diet. They don't use recreational drugs and so on. But go ahead, your thoughts.
Correct. They don't drink, they don't smoke. In Hard to Believe, the movie, we have investigators who have called Chinese hospitals and spoken to doctors, nurses, and brokers as pretending to be patients. Yes. And they called to say, I want a liver from a healthy young person or a heart. And the doctors say, yes, we can do that. And people have specifically asked, the investigators asked, I heard you can get me Falun Gong organs. Can you do that? Yes, yes, yes. Come. Just come. Bring your money. That's what we got, not just one time, but again and again and again. So yes, they've targeted that group. And now a lot of people have heard about the Uyghur Muslims being targeted in the Xinjiang region of China. We didn't do anything to stop the Falun Gong persecution and the use of the organs there. And they started running out. That's the absolute shocking thing, is that, well, the CCP is making a huge amount of money and just increasing their prison population, but well, who are they going to target next? No one stopped them from doing that. So then they moved to the Uyghur Muslims. No life is sacred under the CCP. And it's easy to say, well, that's not my problem, but it is.
What's extraordinary about this, looking at the big picture, is how these practices, even though they're fully documented, are tolerated by Western nations and their governments that claim to defend human rights. So how often do we hear in America, from one party or another, oh, we're pro-human rights, we're pro-humanity, we believe in the individual's right to exist, or what have you. And then you find out, well, and you're doing business with China, and you're not speaking out against this. There's a lot of criticism about the NBA, you know, the Basketball Association, and NBA players, and whoever else is profiting from business deals with China while staying silent about these outrageous human rights abuses. But that's what I notice about this.
Exactly. And I think that's a really accurate observation. And we are selling out for short-term dollars. That's not a sustainable option, because we see what happens. We lose our manufacturing jobs to China. Meanwhile, we get all of our pharmaceuticals, more than 90%, made in China. We have, at the same time, we have the CCP sending deadly fentanyl via Mexico through our southern border.
Good
killing
point.
More than 200 people a day. Meanwhile, we're paying for pharmaceuticals, them to make it here. You know, we are selling out for money. And that's exactly what Marxism wants us to do. They want us to compromise our values and just sell out for money. and forget that we have that we have free will as human beings. Forget the value, devalue ourselves, and think only big government can fix this problem, and think that big government is inevitably going to become socialism. Socialism, it's a big lie that so many people have fallen for, that socialism is inevitable. We should just accept that, you know, China is going to take over. That's a lie. If we start to believe that, well, then we basically just give up. And that's not what America's about. I mean, come on, seriously, that's not what America is built on. And it's not really what people want. So we have to stop selling out, one, for money, and for buying the lies. You know, that's what communism is based on, is lies. And we've got to stop accepting that.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm sure in all of your filmmaking, and I'd like to hear, by the way, some other films that you have available, and ask you how can people get those films, by the way. But I'm sure you've run across people who talk about how vulnerable the CCP actually is. They are and this is why they're terrified and have to be so authoritarian. But China financially is extremely vulnerable because of the Evergrande Ponzi scheme, property developer situation, and so much more, currency manipulation, all of it. China, the CCP at least, is constantly on the verge of collapse, and that's why they have such desperate overreach of power. But you're nodding, but go ahead, your comments on that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's good to laugh about it, because, you know, it's better than crying about it, because you know they seem so powerful. Tyranny always seems so powerful, and that makes us afraid when they look like the big dictator. And sure, they are, because they're playing that role. They want us to be afraid. That's exactly what they want. And so when we're afraid, we play into their hands. But they are vulnerable. You're absolutely right. They are so vulnerable because this regime is built on lies, and it's a house of cards. Once enough people know the truth and they value themselves, then the lies cannot exist anymore. And I'll give you an example of that. I interviewed a former propaganda official for one of the movies I did. I also put his story into my recent book, and he says, I used to wonder why our propaganda department used to teach us that the CCP propaganda media machine, it's all propaganda. All the news is propaganda. They're told that. The journalists are told, you do propaganda, not news. That's the period. And he said, I used to wonder why our director would teach us that propaganda must have two layers of skin. And he said he realized later, after he left the CCP, he said, because the inner layer is the truth, but you cannot let the public know the truth. You have to give them the lie. And if the public knew the truth, he said, the CCP would fall in an instant. And that's what this high level, you know, former official told me. And I heard that from so many of the officials that I interviewed. That just proved to me again that tyranny is vulnerable. And look at what happened to me. Me, you know, young, ignorant woman goes to China, holds up a banner that says compassion, gets thrown into prison. What do? They get me out of there as fast as they can. And even when they tried to make me buy my own plane ticket out, tried to steal my credit card, and I refused. I refused to sign the papers that were all in Chinese that I couldn't read, that they were screaming at me, trying to get me to sign. I said no, and I stood my ground. And then they used all these other propaganda tactics on me, but I didn't give them my credit card because I already had a return flight. They didn't want to wait 3 days, but they paid for my plane ticket to get me out of the country. And when they took me to the plane, they took me in a secret passageway. I didn't pass any airport staff. It was a very quiet passageway to get me all the way directly onto an airplane so that I wouldn't have the chance to say the word compassion to the public again.
Wow.
And that's how much they fear the truth. But as soon as I got on that plane, I stood up and told everyone what happened to me. And there was nothing they could do because I was being sent back, deported to Australia. So they are absolutely vulnerable. And the truth is such a powerful weapon. And we all wield that weapon. And we have to remember that, because tyranny wants us to forget that. But that's where we have the upper hand. We always have, always will.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Susan Sarandon put something out on the internet a couple of days ago. I want to read this for you. And of course, in terms of political slant, Susan Sarandon, you know, leans very much leftist in American politics. But she put out a picture on the internet, and I want to read it for you, because here it is. It's a picture of a message on a wall. It says, "It didn't start with gas chambers. It started with one party controlling the media, one party controlling the message, one party deciding what is truth, one party censoring speech and silencing opposition, one party dividing citizens into us and them and calling on their supporters to harass them. It started when good people turned a blind eye and let it happen." And the internet is so confused, because they're like, does Susan Sarandon not realize that's the tyranny that's also creeping into America right now? How does she not see that? But that's also a great description of exactly what China is like under the CCP, is it not?
It is. It is. And here, it's exactly, I mean, it's George Orwell's 1984, isn't it? And I like to say China is the best example of the worst case that could happen and has happened, because they've had decades of brainwashing their youth. That's the scary thing. Now, our youth are starting to be brainwashed here at a younger age. They've already worked through the college system. Socialists have had that plan for a long time. I mean, really, to think that when the Berlin Wall fell and the communists, who had had their taste of power, having control over Russia and half of Europe and China, to think that they just gave up and started gardening. I mean, seriously, it's just, come on. So they've just gone underground. It's Karl Marx called communism a specter. And he's probably the most, that's probably the most accurate description. It's sort of this ethereal demon thing, according to Marx. And I say he's probably quite right. And so here it's been working on our education system, and now it's targeting our youth. And it just latches onto anything that's going on in, you know, woke agenda and all of that. And it just starts to permeate and twist people's minds. And that's why my last book is called Who Are China's Walking Dead? And that's interviews with former CCP officials. Because to me, that's where we would head if we allow socialism to really take over, to become the single party here. And if we give up, basically, and allow that to take over this nation. Because in China, it was these former Communist Party officials who said to me in one of the interviews early on, one of them said, "We've become soulless bodies, walking flesh." And I had to stop the interviewer at that point, which I rarely do when I'm doing a documentary interview. And I'm like asking the translator, what is he saying? And she said, "Yeah, walking corpses, soulless bodies." And I said, "Okay, it's like really zombie-ish." I said, "Could we say walking dead?" She said, yeah, it's a fair translation. I thought, okay, Americans, we can understand that. But I didn't like it. But I thought, okay, he said it. Let me ask the next guy. You know, so I interview a judge. I interview a guy that ran multiple slave labor prison camps. I interview a former secret agent, national security secret agent in China. I interview all these people and I ask them, "Have you heard of this term?" "Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure we did." And it was when the CCP, when communism started to take over China, there were a lot of people like your family, right, who escaped to Taiwan, escaped to Hong Kong. And it was an academic in Hong Kong who was observing, and he said, "We are going to become the walking dead." And that's where that phrase first came. And that's what they've become themselves, because they've just had to separate their conscience and start putting the party above everything. And that's when there's that disconnect where, say, someone very liberal will say, "Oh, you know, look, there's fascism from, you know, this white guy over here. He's a fascist. He's going to take over the nation and be like Hitler." And you're thinking, hang on, that guy's representing more than 80 million people that actually voted for him. And, you know, you see the hypocrisy or the irony in it. But the way the liberal media are now, people say to me, "How can they not see that they're just parroting ridiculous lies and things?" And I say, well, if you look at Marxism and or certainly the Chinese Communist Party, these people have made an oath to put the party above everything. In China, they pledge an oath that the party's above the country. The party is above the Chinese people. It's above everything. And if someone's got to take a fall, it may be you, because the party cannibalizes itself too. So it's like, that's how this groupthink comes in. And that's what we're seeing in the liberal media, far left media especially, where they should know, they're intelligent people. They should know that what they're saying is kind of ridiculous sometimes. And but they're putting the party line above that logic, above that rationality. And that's what's happened in China to an extreme, because that's been 70 years here, there. But that's the worst. We don't want to go that way. We can see that we're starting to go that way, but we have a different foundation. So I still see a lot of hope here, but we have to recognize like how far it could go.
Absolutely. And it's quite indicative of communism or fascism to have an inversion of reality, such as to say men can get pregnant, for example. That's the inversion that has crept into America. You know, if you get pregnant, you are not a man, you know, period. That's by definition. But we are supposed to believe that, which is exactly the way the CCP brainwashes into people, the false reality. It's exactly the same. And what worries all of us in America is how much of that CCP philosophy is creeping into America right now through the Democrat Party, typically. Now, are you living in America or are you in Australia?
I'm living in upstate New York in America.
Okay, I thought you were on the Eastern time zone. Yeah. Now, these people that you interview, where are you interviewing them? Because don't they put their lives and even their families at great risk? Because China will go after the family members of someone who speaks out like this.
Yeah, these are very brave people. There was a few people that were willing to be interviewed by me who were still living in China at the time. I only agreed to a couple of them. Most of them I said no, because I just knew they were going to be arrested and I just didn't want that blood on my hands. I agreed to a couple of people who were just so gutsy and I was like, oh, I couldn't say no to them because they're just so, oh my gosh, just there's still some really amazing, strong people, clear-headed people. And but the others, I sought out people who had already defected from the regime, who were living in other countries. We had to travel to five countries, including the US. So four countries, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, and for these interviews, as well as America and in a few states here. And yeah, they had already known. The irony is that they left China because they couldn't be themselves. They felt they truly couldn't be Chinese under the communist regime. They felt they were going to die, basically. They couldn't keep one of them. He was responsible for slave labor prison camps where 15-year-old girls were being tortured to death. And he just didn't want to be accomplice to that anymore. So he left because he wanted to have those true human values. They're not just Chinese values, right? They're everyone's values, but they're certainly not communist values. Communist values require that you accept killing, that you accept murder, you accept torture and brutality. There is no bottom line, basically. This is what they also told me, which confirmed it. So these guys, they already knew what was at risk. They already had been called traitors to their home land, even though you think they're such heroes because they said, you know, I want to keep my culture, I want to keep my sanity, I want to keep my humanity, and to do that I have to leave the homeland that I love and try and do it somewhere else, because communism isn't certainly not a Chinese thing.
No.
It came from the West and was implanted to China, so it's kind of crazy.
I'm glad you brought up that point, because you know, as I said earlier, I lived in Taiwan, and but I've toured in China as a speaker on topics of network security in my earlier career. So I've seen that, you know, the Chinese people as an ethnic group are extraordinarily gifted people. They have incredible intellect and creativity and determination and the will to grind through almost anything. They're extraordinary. And yet I look at Taiwan versus mainland China, the exact same genetics. I mean, exactly the same genetics. But Taiwan people have grown up under a system that is so much more free, you know, essentially a democracy. And then in China, it's communism, Marxism, the CCP. And again, exact same genetics. But I know that if I'm in Taiwan, like I can trust a street vendor so much more for an honest transaction. If I'm in mainland China, I know 90% chance I'm going to get ripped off because the morality is gone. The ethics are gone, but it's been beaten out of those people. It's not natural. It was beaten out of them by the CCP, but it's not who they really are. Just as you just said.
That's the nail on the head that we have to hit, is that the CCP is not China. The CCP is not the Chinese people. And even today, the propaganda that just controls the media, state-run media, there is no non-state-run media in China. It's all controlled by one party. And even today, there's headlines where they say China is the Communist Party. To love China is to love the Communist Party. That China was founded in 1949 when the Chinese Communist Party came in. It's a lie. But when you hear it enough, then you just start to think, oh yeah, that's how it is. And children, when they're indoctrinated with that from birth, they just don't question it. And that's where, in my book, I have a chapter called Lives of Grass. And that's what so many Chinese people told me. They said, our lives aren't worth any more than grass. And just today, a friend of mine messaged me and said her small town in China has gone into lockdown. They don't know how long it's going to be for. She said, thank goodness my father had just visited and given some food to my cousins. He got out and the city's just gone into lockdown. And it's a small city. And because of this crazy zero COVID policy, the city's gone into lockdown. They don't know what's going to happen. And I said, how are your family members feeling? And she said, they are just so used to being treated as trash. They don't know. They just don't know. And Wow. And another woman told me in an interview, she said, human rights? Like, we don't know human rights. She said, no one ever taught us what human rights are. We don't have human rights. This is the biggest fundamental difference between China and America. America, we say, one nation under God, all men are created equal. In China, they say, well, Darwinism, Marxism, Leninism, all humans are animals and only the elites are going to rule. But those elites may decide just to eat each other, fight each other, and then there'll be new elites and they're all fighting over that power. There is no divine law. That's it. So that's the biggest difference. And so many people say, well, human rights, what can we do about human rights in China? There has always been a problem there. It's the problem. It is the problem that the CCP conflates and makes everyone think that China can't exist without it, which is a total lie. And they just, you know, human life isn't valuable. It doesn't matter. You can just throw people into lockdown willy-nilly, just lock them up for 2 weeks. They may starve.
Well, or millions of people, or weld the door shut on apartment buildings. That exactly. happened too. But, you know, here in America, as you know, we have the concept of cancel culture, which is wielded as a kind of weapon of oppression against people who do not follow mainstream narratives or who step outside the bounds in whatever way. And I would say the most recent target of that is Kanye West, right? The rapper. Yeah. He's been deplatformed. His fortune is being stripped from him and so on and so forth. And people can debate all the reasons. But where is the deplatforming of China among all the U.S. businesses and all the U.S., like I said earlier, basketball stars or governors of U.S. states that do business with China? Is it really all just about, quote, business, which is about money and payoffs and profits? Well, what about morality? If cancel culture turned its sight upon China and just said, we cancel China until they stop these human rights abuses, we do not do business with them, we do not recognize them, we do not import, export, purchase anything, even Walmart, for God's sake, right? Then that would be maybe the legitimate use of cancel culture, but that's never used that way.
No. Globalization has put us into a difficult situation. We have to sacrifice on something. And I really feel we're at a very historic time right now where things are going. We're going to see a lot of changes. Even in China right now, the population has dwindled so much. It's aging out. They're not having more kids. We don't know how many people have died during COVID, but good we point. Know it's certainly much more than what the CCP has said. The population is expected to be really dropping even below a billion in a few years. So I think, you know, maybe it was 5 to 10 years I was hearing from a demographics expert. And
that's, let me interrupt you. I mean, isn't it currently 1.4 billion?
Yeah.
I mean, that's extraordinary. That's okay. Yeah. I'm sorry
to interrupt, when I heard that, I thought, well, that sounds crazy. And then I listened through the whole presentation, then I looked at the research and I was like, oh, yeah, you add all those factors up. Yeah. And China and the CCP knows that the population is aging out, and they've been trying to push 2-child policy, 3-child policy. It's not working. And morality is a big part of that. As you bring up morality, that is really fundamental, because they've stripped the morality from the society and they've made people worship money. It's very hard for people to get married. It's very hard for people to trust each other. They don't want to have kids with each other. They're not trusting each other to that extent. They're not having those close relationships are so hard because the CCP has worked so hard to control the individuals and not to build up strength in family units, strength in local communities. There's so much corruption there that people don't feel safe. And if they want to have families, they want to get out of China and do it in another country, because in China they don't feel safe. So true. Not to say that people aren't having kids, but the amount of people having kids is so low now that the population is just dramatically, dramatically shifting down. And with COVID, it's going down even faster. So China's in a really difficult state. And so things kind of look crazier and crazier, but I mean, the CCP isn't doing nearly as much foreign investment as they were in the past. If you look at the numbers there, that has dropped down so much, even just prior to 2020. So the economy, like you mentioned, Evergrande, the banks, it's really dire straits. And that's when you put your whole faith into money. And what have you got? You know, money's just, it's still intangible. And everyone who's just selling out to China, it is a morality issue too, because China uses them. They will bribe them. They intentionally try to get people into compromising situations, get them drunk, get them drugged, take them and then film them doing inappropriate things with inappropriate people on visits to China. Then they own you. And this is not like a random occurrence. This is a strategy, a proven effective strategy, where if they can buy you and they can own you and they can blackmail you, what a business is going to do, what a politician's going to do, they're going to do whatever the CCP says. And
it's like the Jeffrey Epstein, but run by a whole country.
it's really like a mafia state. Yes,
seriously. It's like, wow, yeah, come to China, we'll trap you and then blackmail you and control you forever. And it's just crazy. You know, a few years ago, you know, we're in the storable foods and supplements business, and we were the only company I know of to actually start having China-free labels on our products, because we refused to source from China unless it was a last resort. And I think the main thing we still source from China are goji berries from the Tibetan regions, which is, you know, very different. But, you know, we had China free, and a lot of people were saying, what is that? Never heard of China free. I'm like, well, it means we try to buy it from anywhere else. You know, I mean, come on, it should be self-explanatory here, but you know, people like you and I have to educate a lot of folks about these issues going on, but fortunately you are being very effective. And tell us about your other films, please, if you would.
Sure. And another movie I made, the most recent one actually, is Finding Courage. It's still going through film festivals. And that's a family story. That's one that sitting in audiences in a cinema, sitting with audiences in a cinema and watching that has been just really great, because you hear people laugh. We can have laughter, even with these sad stories and tragedies, we can have laughter. And so there's some happy moments in this movie. There are sad moments. You're hearing people cry, you're hearing people gasp, but at the end people come out with hope. And that's really, I guess, a theme through my work is faith over fear, overcoming tragedy, and strength of families as a support and a way to fight tyranny. And so this story was of a Chinese American family. They had some family in China, some family in America, and three siblings were arrested, interestingly enough, for doing the same thing as me, holding a banner in Tiananmen Square. And I found that out later, that these two of the sisters were in the same prison cell as me. Wow. And yeah, but I had white skin and an Australian passport. I got out. Yeah, they didn't. One of them was killed brutally in a slave labor prison camp. And we have the undercover footage inside the slave labor prison camp to prove that. Shocking, but that's in the movie. And we also have that one sister got out to America, was able to tell her story, but at great risk to her family. And a brother was sent to prison for 13 years for printing flyers. And I have the court papers from the judge, which I had translated, for printing flyers. That's why he was sentenced to 13 years in prison, and the torture he received was phenomenally horrific even to this day. It's shockingly bad. You can watch this movie without, it's not gory, but these people's story, it can't help but move your heart. And that movie's called Finding Courage because that's what these family have done. And while I was making that movie, that's when I started to realize the victims can't give me the answers that I need. I need to know, how can the CCP be so cruel? How can people do this type of torture and ridiculous stuff, like putting people into prison for printing flyers? So that's when I started to interview these former CCP officials and say, what's going on with the slave labor prison camps? And they talk about it as if they're like, oh, this is what we've always done. You know, what's wrong with you? That's what they're saying to me.
The thing is, even in America, if you look at the more totalitarian people in the radical left-wing movements, they talk exactly the same way as the CCP torturers. I mean, they talk about wanting to kill and destroy and harm people with whom they disagree. It's really not, I mean, and again, throughout human history, this has been repeated over and over again. There is the potential for extreme cruelty when people are manipulated using, I would say, satanic influence or anti-God themes, you know, destroying the family, destroying the individual, destroying the freedom to speak, the freedom to worship, and so on. It's not surprising to me when that dark side comes out. But just in interest of time, I want to respect your time. About your book, Nowhere Left to Run, 10 Steps to Survive Tyranny. People can download it for free from your website. Could you tell us one, or give us a couple of clues about what's in that book?
Sure. One of the stories that really led me to write this book, and it's a short book. I wanted to make it short because we need less people are reading these days. So I'm like, okay, let's keep this short and get it to more people. That's why I made it free and made it short. One of the women that I interviewed who survived 4 years in a slave labor prison camp, she told me how much the guards at this camp had to police them so severely because they didn't want these innocent prisoners to make eye contact with each other. Because eye contact, if someone was being tortured and they were trying to transform them, you know, that's what re-education, brainwashing. When the guards are trying to transform somebody, they don't want the other prisoners to see them if they're not broken. And so they would always be trying to stop them from looking at each other, because just that one glance from someone who isn't broken would say to the whole camp, you can do it too.
Wow.
And it would just give such hope. And what's even more powerful than that eye contact was a smile. She said, you know, when someone smiled at you in the camp, you just knew they're okay. And it would make you feel like, oh, I could be okay. I can get through this. And that was horrendous torture, like absolute day in, day out, barely sleeping if you're lucky, total slave labor. You're not getting a cent for that. And horrific conditions and brutality, transformation, torture, all of that stuff. These people got through it because they had each other to say, you can do it. I'm going to make this. I made it through today. How about you? Yes, I made it through today. And they get through it. So this led me on a track to really look at how people over history have used brainwashing techniques against us, manipulation through the media techniques, and how people have survived that, seen through it, and strengthened themselves to be able to defend themselves against it. People who have survived brainwashing, whether it's been experiments or actually real brainwashing in prison camps throughout history, certainly in the last few decades, those who had strong family ties were that was a constant theme through those who could get through it. There was someone in the world that needed them. There was someone in the world that they loved. That love gets you through so much. Yes, faith, absolutely. You need faith in something higher, but you also need, we're human beings. We need that interaction with each other. So these are a few of the stories that I talk about in my book, but I really just go through 10 steps, and strengthening your family is one of them, and using your miraculous body, including smiling, is another one, because you can fake a smile and you're still going to set off the chemical reaction in your body. You may not feel awesome straight away, but if you keep working at it, you're going to trick yourself and you will feel better, guaranteed. You tried, even scientists have proven this. And you are also giving a gift to everyone around you that sees that. It is so powerful, and tyranny cannot control that. So it's so simple. It sounds so simple, and we want to think, oh, it's too simple, you know. But it's the socialists that want us to over-intellectualize, think we're not smart enough, we're not, you know, we're too dumb to, you know, we give all of our decision-making to the big federal government and all of that. Don't buy any of that. It really is that simple. So, yes, please download my book, take a look through the 10 steps, and the feedback that I've got from people is that, yes, this is on point, and we need a lot of hope these days, because that's what's going to get us through. I really believe that, hope and faith, and hopefully that's what you'll find in my book.
Well, well said. It's extraordinary. Thank you for all of your work and for putting that book out for free. And folks, the website is krubacek.com, and I'll spell it again, KayRubacek.com. It's just C-E-K, not C-H or anything, even though it's pronounced like that. To those of us in America. But Kay, it's been a pleasure to be able to speak with you. And I really honor your work and what you're doing. It's extraordinary. It takes tremendous courage, dedication, professionalism, all of these things. And I'm so glad that you're doing what you're doing. And we would welcome you back anytime. So please consider that an open invitation.
Oh, much appreciated. I think everything you're doing is really absolutely fundamentally needed. You've been doing it for a long time. Keep at it. I love your work, and I really appreciate your kind words of encouragement. We need to encourage each other more, you know, just remind each other we can do this, and we will.
Absolutely. Well said. So there you go, folks. The interview with Kay Rubacek, our very first conversation. I hope we'll have many more. Feel free to repost this interview on your own channels, other platforms, other websites. You have our permission to do so. This needs to get out there. Spread the word about her website, krubacek.com. Download that free book, Nowhere Left to Run, 10 Steps to Survive Tyranny, which means we've got to beat tyranny. You can't just move to another country or another planet. We got to beat tyranny now for humanity to have a future. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com. Thank you for watching today. We love you all. We love humanity. Thank you for all that you do. A global reset is coming, and that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.